Welcome to episode 117 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.
Natty Hattie.
Season preview edition for the 2017-18 season, I believe.
Yes, it is the 17-18 season.
No, that part
you're correct.
That part is accurate. I believe that this is the third season, or this will be the third season that we've done this podcast for.
Yeah, right? we still kind of put up with each other. And Craig's still here. Special guest Craig Morgan is still here 3 years later.
Ever since episode four?
Just typing in phone numbers over here.
Yeah, Craig's not really here. He's not here.
It's my way of coping.
It's your passive-aggressive way of saying you want to be done with the podcast. Is that what you're doing over there?
Should I talk into the mic?
It'd be nice, but I don't want to change anything up this close to this.
Yeah, we've done it for 3 years a certain way. Yeah. So why should we start hearing Craig now?
The listeners are used to you talking into your coffee while your microphone sits idle about 3 feet away from you. So,
okay.
How excited is everybody that the season is here? Scale of 1 to 100.
1 to 100.
Yeah.
71.
What, really?
Yeah, Malkin. Oh, Malkin okay. Edition. No, I'm excited. I do feel like it kind of snuck up on me a little bit. You know, I guess if you're a fan of multiple sports, you kind of get football season up and rolling. Baseball's about to head to the postseason and go, oh, yeah, hockey's back on Wednesday night.
Well, and you know, to be fair, when you take a vacation every other week, the year really, the offseason especially, flies by.
That's so, my chair.
No, okay. It's louder than Craig.
Squeaky chair makes an early appearance on
sound effects. Yeah.
Special guest mm-hmm. Craig's chair.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It did kind of sneak up, but you know, again, Craig and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. Football season here feels like it's already over with all the injuries that the NFL team has suffered, so I'm ready for hockey.
There was no off season this year either, especially surrounding the team we cover.
That's true.
There was no off season, which is why I'm not really ready for NHL season to start. But
oh, you're not ready either?
Nobody asked me. Nobody consulted me.
That was an open-ended question to everybody. First of all, it's throwing me off that Jamie's here. When Jamie's here, it's like...
I've been here way more than I've not been here.
I know, but it's just, it's like Tyler Durden from Fight Club. When he's here, I don't know if I'm really talking to Jamie. So when I throw the question out, Jamie jumped in with an answer. Craig, how excited are you on a scale of 1 to 100?
I'm going to say somewhere around a 60.
This is unbelievable. I'm at a 99.
I say, what are you, Luke?
Did 99. We just lose a lot of listeners?
I think that number is retired.
Okay, I'm at a 98.
Okay,
that?
Luke brought him back.
I always want there to
Luke's
be
excited.
A little room for improvement. Yeah, hockey season is here. What is there to not be excited about?
Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
Your team, the team you root for, has won back-to-back Stanley Cups.
Okay.
The team I root for could go really downhill this year. And the team that I cover is not quite ready to be a contender. So
I also
that might have something to do with it.
Cover that team.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, so...
But you do have the Penguins.
That team is... Chicago's won 3 Stanley Cups in the last 9 years.
See, you could just put an arbitrary time frame around it and it sounds good.
They've also won 3 in like the last 40 years.
Look at their blue line.
They've also won 0 Cups in the last 2 years.
Yes, that's thank you, point. See?
All right, well, let's start there.
Fun with arbitrary deadlines.
The 3 Stanley Cups in
that's
the last
that's the name of our next podcast.
Since Ben is a pretty good feat. Don't have me complimenting the Blackhawks to start off the preview episode. We're going to start with the Penguins. They've won the last 2. The reason we're starting with the Penguins, by the way, is because Craig told me we have to. So that's where we're going. Trying for the elusive three-peat that hasn't been done in over 30 years. The back-to-back hadn't been done in just about 20 years. They did that, obviously, back in June. Where are we coming out on this? Is this a realistic thing? Should we just do everything on a scale of 1 to 100?
No, we shouldn't. Is it realistic? Yeah.
Wait, how do you feel about that idea?
I give that idea a 37 out of 100.
That's better than I could have hoped for.
I mean, yes, it's realistic. Pittsburgh's got a very strong team. They return most of the players they did last year. Maybe they'll have Chris Letang for the long haul. Maybe they won't. Apparently, it doesn't matter as much as I thought it mattered at the start of the postseason. I mean... History tells you it's very unlikely, but as I look through the rest of the league, I don't see another very obvious team that I say, that team is better than Pittsburgh on paper.
That's fair. I would agree with that. I don't think they're going to win 3 in a row just because at some point you've played all these extra playoff games, and they do. I mean, Chris Letang just can't seem to stay on the ice consistently, and who's to say they don't have another injury somewhere. I don't think their offseason losses are as damaging as people want to make them out to be, because a lot of those guys were sort of later in their career or they were replaceable, but they have lost pieces. They're not as good now on paper as they were going into last season.
Yeah, you're talking about a backup goalie. You're talking about a forward who was past his prime and probably can be replaced. Trevor Daley, defenseman who Couldn't even make it in Chicago, I might add. Couldn't even fit on their blue line.
He was pretty helpful for Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
for
Nick Bonino might hurt them.
Bonino hurts.
Yeah, Bonino's the one that hurts. But for the most part, I don't think that their losses make them any less of a Stanley Cup contender than they were before. And that's more of a comment on I don't see another team that I think that team is ready. Like I'm out on Washington. Well, we have talked about this a lot. I think Edmonton is rising, but I don't think Edmonton's good enough to win the West yet.
Blasphemy.
I know.
Tell that to TSN.
Despite everybody in Canada that tells me Connor McDavid's the best player in hockey and Edmonton is going to win 3 cups in the next 2 years, neither of those things are going to happen.
I thought Edmonton already won the cup this year.
Oh,
that changes my whole preview.
You're right. When you look at the other teams that you would even consider contenders, Anaheim starting the season without two of its three best defensemen. They'll probably miss a month. And they're still Anaheim. They've had some issues in the postseason. Let's be honest about that. Even though they have a very good blue line, they have some good pieces. They haven't had great postseason success since that cup that was about a decade ago now. Yeah. Tampa Bay, you want to believe that this team has all the pieces, but they had injuries last season. They missed the postseason. You still have to get Tyler Johnson and Andre Palat back to where they were. They need to produce more. You have to see Steven Stamkos get through a season and believe he's healthy. You still wonder about that blue line. They probably still need a piece because getting Sergachev probably doesn't help them this season. He's still probably a guy that helps them down the road. So when you try and find the teams, Edmonton and Toronto are still too young. There really isn't a clear-cut team where you say, this is an elite team, like Chicago or L.A. were coming off the last few years.
I still feel this is a little bit of this transition period that Craig's talked about a lot. He's talked about the turnover in the Western Conference. Again, I like Calgary. I still think they're a little bit away. Nashville's a kind of an interesting team where they lived up to their potential in the postseason, but they didn't for most of the regular season. Edmonton's probably a year or so away. Columbus, I still think they're a year or two away from being truly like a team that we're talking about in the Cup final. And I don't really, Toronto's same deal. Tampa Bay, we talked about with their injuries, they still only won 42 games last year. So it's tough to see another team at the very start of the season. We say, yes, they're the team that the Penguins have to worry about. Somebody will emerge over the next 6 months. But right now, it's tough to pick anybody. I think their biggest competition might be Anaheim. But I don't know if any of us are all that confident that Anaheim is going to be the team that comes out of the West this year either.
Anaheim doesn't feel like a fun team to make the pick. Well, I'm going to predict the Ducks to win the Stanley Cup. Like, they're always there. They're good. I'm pretty sure, still, according to Vegas, they have the highest over-under in terms of points. So they are predicted, you know, by the public, I guess, as being the best regular season team. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about who's going to win the Stanley Cup. The thing I would say about Pittsburgh is, and I completely agree that it is wide open this year, I think that's just better for hockey in general, because if Pittsburgh maybe had lost in the conference final last year, I'd be picking them as my favorite to win it this year because they do have a good enough team. But it's just hard to pick a team to win 3 years in a row, especially when they have to go through the Metro. So you know their first two rounds of the playoffs are going to be difficult unless, I guess, if they won the division and got the second wild card and some team snuck in there. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a tough path, and yet not having a clear-cut winner to me is, going into the season, not having a clear-cut winner, I think is great for hockey. I really do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we talked about this on the previous podcast as well. Again, like you said, Jimmy, with the Western Conference, it's really hard to handicap even who's going to make the playoffs in the West, not to mention who's going to make it to the Cup final. And the East feels similar I know you talked about the Metro still being a power. I have some questions about the Metro. I don't think Washington's going to be as good this year. I still need to see Columbus do this on a consistent basis. That still is the anomaly in the Columbus Blue Jackets' history. They need to prove that they can do this again. Can Cam Atkinson really score 35 goals again? Is Alex Wenberg really an elite number one center? There are a lot of questions surrounding a lot of teams. So
they've never won a playoff series.
Yeah. And yet we're all singing their praises as a great team, an elite team. They've got to prove it for two seasons at least.
And we've seen teams in the past peak and then fall back down. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen Columbus, maybe not to this high, but do this as well before. So it's tough. You look at Montreal, I don't think they have enough pieces. Their goaltending really, really helps them, but they don't look like a cup contender anywhere else on the ice. The Rangers, that window for them to actually win a cup is closed years ago. We don't need to talk about Ottawa. We've trashed them enough over the last several months. I mean, so I guess the interesting storyline would be watching the teams like Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary, and seeing, okay, how far along are they? do they just, whether it's by luck, whether it's by just quick maturation, whether it's something else that happens, can they pop up and contend with the big dogs that have been on the porch now for 5, 6, 7, 8 years? But I just don't see an obvious answer.
Yeah, and Calgary is a fascinating team to me. And of course, we talked with Eric Duhacek earlier this week about them. You know, you add Travis Hamonic, you bring Jaromir Jagr in, and you've got a young mix up front. You've got one of the best blue lines in hockey. A lot of people look at Toronto and Edmonton and assume, okay, here's our cup final, if not next year, several times in the future. But Calgary's an interesting team in that mix, and that's another team that could take a big step forward.
I feel like Calgary has built a better team than Edmonton, but Edmonton's more dangerous, obviously, because of McDavid and Draisaitl. If you stacked up the two rosters and just picked one team out of it, I feel like...
Because of luck and injustice.
I feel like 80% of the roster, if you build an all-star team between the Oilers and Flames, 80% would be the Flames. They've built their team more for the long haul, but, you know, Edmonton came in and they got McDavid, and they drafted well to take Draisaitl where they did, and... I love that the battle for Alberta is a legitimate rivalry among two of the top teams. I got a couple teams I want to ask you guys about, and one of them we sort of already touched on, so I want to go back to them. Has the public perception, and this might be totally fair, in fact it is totally fair, of the Washington Capitals swung too far the other way? Because now we're treating them like, well, they can't win a Stanley Cup, so how good really are they? They could easily still win the President's Trophy again this year.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the losses, what ultimately they lost, they didn't lose T.J. Oshie in the end, so that's important, right?
Well, yeah, he has all their money now.
Yeah, he does, and that's a problem. But
next ever.
They did keep – I mean, I don't know how much you're going to miss Carl Alsner, Justin Williams, some of these guys, but they're, you know, your backup goaltender. They're probably pieces that you can replace, but it's little hits to their depth, and again, this is – somehow, some way, a flawed team when it gets to the postseason anyway. I don't know what they need, but I at some point I wonder about the Capitals' psyche as much as anything. If they weren't going to win the Cup last year, when the heck are they going to win the Cup? And what are they thinking? What are they believing about themselves right now after they had that golden opportunity? Everything was in their favor last season, and they didn't get it done.
Going into Game 7, look, you can sit there and you can talk about how much a team mentally might be impacted by a loss. Every year we can pick teams out that might just be demoralized or whatever, but we never know really how much of it is 100% true, because you're not talking about one player. You're talking about a 23-man roster and a coach and a coaching staff and everything. But for them to go into Game 7 against Pittsburgh last year at home with all the momentum in that series, because they had rallied and won the last couple games, and not even score a goal, that to me was the first time when I... Because I've kind of been on the Capitals bandwagon the last few years of being... that one guy who's saying, look at all this talent, this team's going to break through at some point. When they couldn't win Game 7 against Pittsburgh this past season, that, to me, was... I don't know how they bounce back from that.
They're going to be in the mix because they're too good not to be. But the problem is, and it's what we talked about in the postseason, the team that comes out on the ice this year is in no way going to be better than the team they iced the last 2 years, and particularly last year. And if that wasn't enough to get the job done, I don't know when it could be. Now, maybe Pittsburgh gets just ravaged by injuries, and then you're in a situation where they're trying to go through the Columbuses, Montreals, Torontos of the world, and maybe they can be better than them. But it's tough to look at that team and say, yeah, that I feel confident they're going to now take this next step forward this year when they've had better teams and have done less.
Don't you think the best thing that could happen to them is if the expectations go the other way and they sort of fly under the radar and... You know, they finish second in the Metro or whatever, and they come in as almost an afterthought, like a good team, but an afterthought, and maybe some of that pressure gets off.
I don't know that that's going to happen, though, with the Capitals, just because of who they are and their basic narrative. That I don't think people are going to look at their season and just say, okay, yeah, but wait for the postseason. I think that's going to be the storyline around the Capitals until they do something in the playoffs.
There's a chance that it happens in the regular season, but there's no chance once it comes to the playoffs that people aren't going to talk about past failures. And again, you don't know. I want to see what this team looks like mid-season. I want to see what this team looks like following the Olympics, even though they're not going there. They have a lot of players on that team, including their best player, that's going to be very, very upset about not being there. Does that create some sort of tension with the team? I mean, there's just so many things going on that I can't look at the Capitals and say I have any more confidence than I've had the last 2 years, and they flat out haven't been able to get the job done.
A couple other teams I want to touch on. Nashville, who made the Stanley Cup last year, pushed the Penguins to 6 games. I thought played really well. It was great for hockey. We talked about it a lot. during those episodes how fantastic it was for the sport to have exposure for guys like PK Subban and just the hockey scene in Nashville and the way they sort of came together with the music community there and everything. And that was a lot of fun. And I think it was great for the sport on the national stage. But we talked about this a few episodes ago. Talking about a team that underachieved during the regular season, I think we all agree, but also was the 16th team out of 16 to make the playoffs. And now they're playing who knows how long without Ryan Ellis. They lost James Neal. They lost Mike Fisher. I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs, but it's no given that they even make it in that division.
Yeah, and I did a column on NHL season preview. I don't even have – and this is crazy when I was going through it, but in my heart, I don't believe that the Nashville Predators are even going to be a cup contender this year. I think they're going to struggle this year. I think they'll be a playoff team in the West, but like you said, they were the last team in, and they just got hot. They got hot at the right time. They took a bunch of hits, and it's not easy getting out of the West, and I think there's going to be a hangover for this team this year, and they're going to struggle a little bit, unless, of course, they go out and get Matt Duchene and improve that center position. That could change
things. Everything?
It could. It could be an injection. It could really help their center position.
Yeah,
give them sort of that dynamic they need up front.
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, this is a team that you want to watch for potential trades going forward, and especially at the trade deadline or sooner if they get a guy like Duchene. They can counteract some of the losses they have because of injury and because of just players that they've lost, whether it's to Vegas or otherwise, by just playing up to their potential earlier in the season. But yeah, I don't... Even though the West is just weird and you can make a case for probably 10 teams to come out of the West because nobody's that great, not because the 10 teams are that great, I just don't have a lot of confidence that Nashville is going to do it. I mean, we talk about their blue line. Their blue line's excellent, but yeah. I like Calgary's blue line more. I might even like – I mean, Anaheim's –
Well, you mean without Ryan Ellis?
Yeah.
Yeah, without Ryan Ellis I do. And I mean, we talk about them underachieving. When you look at Nashville's forward group, are you blown away by their forward group?
No.
You're really not.
No.
It's not a great forward group, and there are questions about Pekka now too, who's getting older and older. Can he play the same kind of minutes and games as he has in the past?
We had Adam Vingan on last week, a couple episodes ago, and he was pretty clear that the biggest issue for this team, obviously other than the Ryan Ellis injury, is their forward group, and how many of those guys overachieved. Like, their top goal scorers last year were Philip Forsberg, who I'm pretty confident that's who he is. He's been that way for a couple of years. He's definitely better than Martin Irad, who they traded to get him. I think we can all say that.
Oh, is he?
Well, I mean, I guess if you want to take the real long view, the jury's still out, but I feel like he's better. But Victor Arvidsson was their other dominant goal scorer, and he's never done that before. We don't know. And again, James Neal's consistently 25 goals. He's not there anymore. Yeah. So who's scoring?
Exactly. And to James Neal's point, and we brought this up a couple shows ago, there was nobody – I had not seen anybody more upset about losing a player at the expansion draft than Poile was about losing James Neal. And I think that says a lot about what he meant to the team.
He could go get him back at the trade deadline.
I wouldn't be shocked by that. that would be interesting.
We agree that Nashville's getting Matt Duchene. I know when we had Vingan on last week, he said basically now that they have to rely on Matias Ekholm without Ryan Ellis, it makes it tougher to make a trade. But again, David Poile always gets the guy he wants, and Joe Sakic always seems to give up the guy somebody else wants.
He's going to wait until the offer goes down to like a yard of firewood or something.
Yeah, and draft pick.
I just don't know where else he would go at this point.
There are a couple places. I could see him going to Columbus.
Really?
Yeah.
Nashville makes the most.
They need Shane and Tortorella. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
But yeah. What will John Tortorella look like this year, by the way? Which John Tortorella will we get?
I think it depends how the team starts,
I agree with you completely.
Yeah. give me like a month to answer. Yeah. And if Columbus is hovering just below 500, I think we may get like 2014 John Tortorella. But if they start out strong again, I think we're going to see the same sort of reformed head coach that we saw last year.
Or at least until Sean Avery writes another book.
Okay. Dallas, a team that didn't get mentioned by either one of you when discussing contenders.
Well, they are in my dark horses to win the cup.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize that we have a script.
Nice if you just read something.
I feel like the hype is going a little crazy on Dallas right now.
It might be.
I like them. I think they're a playoff contender. They had massive flaws 2 years ago. They still have most of those flaws now. Now the goaltending should be a bit better, assuming Ben Bishop is the Ben Bishop from 2 years ago, not the Ben Bishop from early last season.
We're talking
a lot about split personalities today, aren't we?
Yeah. Well,
maybe that's the title of the show.
Split person. Goalies are weird.
It doesn't really work goalies with NHL preview. Split personality, no. Okay.
Again, they have the ability on offense to be an elite offensive team, mm-hmm. but I don't like their blue line. Their goaltending should be improved, but I'm not ready to say this team is already just going to be 20, 25 points better than they were last year just because they got Ben Bishop.
To me, two things stand out here. You have to hope – I mean, signing Mark Methot was probably a good move for this team. He's going to help their blue line. He's not a big name, but I think he'll help. I think the big thing on their blue line is some of those young players have to progress significantly. And then the other big question here is, what sort of impact does Ken Hitchcock have on this team? Can he make them a better defensive team? We know they are going to have to play with more structure. He's going to demand it. We know he has a shelf life, but Dallas is all about the now, so maybe Hitch is there for 3 years before he retires for good. But if he can overlay that sort of structure on this team, get them committed to it. I mean, when you look at that forward group, man, that top line could be the best top line in hockey when you're talking about Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, and Alex Radulov.
It's pretty good. Boston's got a pretty good one, too, now, assuming they don't trade David Pastrnak. But, you know, to Jamie's point, and this pains me because this is going to be the first and quite possibly last time this season I agree with him, I typically don't like just picking a team to make a 25-point jump. There's usually, a lot has to go right for that to happen. But in this case, you know, two seasons ago, Dallas finished with 109 points. Last season, 79. They had a ton of injuries. I am a little nervous about just assuming that because all these pieces look like they fit together on paper, that means they suddenly will on the ice. It never works out quite the way you planned it out when you're putting together a roster. But they made good moves this offseason, and I kind of feel like what they are is probably the true Dallas Stars coming into this offseason was really closer to somewhere between where they were in 2016 and 2017, and that's about an 84, 85-point team. So if you add these other pieces on, I think they're at least a playoff team.
Yeah, I think they're a playoff team, and I would pick them to make the playoffs, but I think there's this line where, and partly because nobody really knows how to handicap the West, as Craig brought up at the start of the show, they say, oh, why not Dallas? And I just think there are too many flaws on the back end for Dallas to be a true cup contender next year. But you know what? Maybe they just decide to outscore everybody like they tried to do 2 years ago. And if they have better goaltending, maybe they might be able to get out of the West.
And maybe they go acquire another defenseman at some point during the season to help out there if they identify that as a need. But you got to have good goaltending from Ben Bishop. We all agree on that. We agree that Hitchcock has to make this team play better defense as well. But when you look up the middle, look at that team up the middle now. Martin Hansel is your third line center.
Which is what he should be. I think he's a pretty good second line center, but he is an absolute tremendous advantage if you have him as a third line center. Mm-hmm. Assume you can get, a decent amount of games out of him. But if he's able to play, if he can give them 70 games this year, which I know is, not by any means something you can just count on from him, but if he gives them 70 games and he's healthy for the playoffs, that's a tremendous addition. And Radulov's a good addition, too. I think people see the year he had last year and they look at his KHL stats and they just assume he'll do that in the NHL. That's not the case.
He's playing with Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin. That's going to help a lot. And, I also look at this as a really big year for Tyler Seguin. I think this is his chance to – I already think he's there, but there's some people who look at his defensive game maybe unfairly and judge him that way. But I think this is his year to move up into that elite status of number one centers. He's got a coach who's going to make him be a complete 200-foot center, forgive the cliche. And oh, by the way, after this season, he has 1 year left on his contract, so he's going to be playing for money as well. I think this is a really big season for Tyler Seguin.
His big thing is not to the extent of Hansel, but can he stay on the ice? He's had some tough injuries the last couple years. The addition of Ken Hitchcock, who is such a different style of coach than a lot of teams are used to, how much does that potentially set them back at the beginning of the year? I'm always wary of teams that switch coaches. I know when they do it in mid-season, for whatever reason in the NHL, it can work out really well. But I'm always wary of just assuming a team that has a new coach is going to get out of the gates quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to say for sure, but it's also not...
No, say it for sure.
They're also not that young of a team. They're not dealing with they have a lot of veteran players, a lot of players that do have an ability to play a two-way game that I don't know if it's going to be the same transition it would be if you stuck them in, let's say, Edmonton, for example, for players that are used to going one direction for the most part and being just dynamic offensively. But
Did you just make a One Direction reference?
No, I did not.
Are you humming One Direction right now?
I probably know, this is one or two One Direction songs.
Okay.
I have my guilty pleasure songs. They're not One Direction, though. Oh, okay. So I can't help you.
All right. I don't believe it.
No. I've totally lost my train of thought. But I can't
understand why.
I think overall Ken Hitchcock's addition will be a plus for Dallas, even if it does take a little time to get used to. But I'm not sure it's going to be a massive transition period.
And it, you know what? And when you, even if it is in the West, I'm not sure it matters this year. I think you can – I don't think you need to be one of the high seeds in the West this year. I think the Western playoffs this year – could be absolutely insane where you have upsets all over the place.
You know what? So-called upsets. That. Yeah, like just basically be one of the eight teams in the playoffs and then let's see what happens. If I'm reading this right, yeah, these aren't alphabetical order. You have Dallas, Craig, winning the Central Division.
I do.
Craigslist predict. See, I read at least two words of your article.
Well, you did after I asked you to. You just opened
it doesn't
up the
matter.
Just
forced
now,
to.
Didn't you?
You have Chicago fifth in the Central Division. You're out of control. You have the Blackhawks fifth.
I was waiting for somebody to comment on
it. No, we're getting there. Don't worry. Okay. In fact, we're getting there right now. A team that is right now tied for fourth in terms of favorites to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Well, are you looking at TSN's list?
Well, that's wrong,
too. They have Edmonton and Toronto among the top five.
If it was TSN's list, they'd be eighth behind seven Canadian teams.
Both can be wrong. So Craig has fully gone on to the – we have just kind of a little bit of inside baseball here. My boss, Keith, is a big Kansas City Chiefs fan.
Okay.
But he's very much one of those fans that thinks his team is terrible regardless of what their record is.
Okay.
So they're 4-0, but if they were to lose today, I guarantee you will walk in the office tomorrow and tell me how they're not going to make the playoffs this year.
That's fair.
That's kind of what Craig is at with the Blackhawks right now.
Consider my upbringing.
And to
consider
be fair,
where I grew up.
And to be fair, there are a lot of red flags and reasons to be concerned.
There are.
However,
but
the West isn't great.
Too far.
The West isn't great, and the Central is very much not great.
Okay.
I think it's more likely Minnesota misses the playoffs than Chicago, if you ask me.
It's definitely more likely that Nashville misses. Chicago's not missing the playoffs with Joel Quenneville as their coach unless Taves gets hurt. There's just if the Blackhawks just play out their season and everybody plays, for the most part, their games. You know,
Alex
maybe,
DeBrincat might make that roster, by the way.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
They're not missing the playoffs. And in fact, they're a dangerous team.
I'll cop to all that so we can just end that discussion on the Blackhawks.
I'm sure we'll never talk about it again.
I am down on the Blackhawks because they've mismanaged the cap and mismanaged their blue line. But, yeah, fifth place might be a little too low. But, when you look at the teams ahead of them, they could all finish ahead of them.
They could. The Central has six teams out of the seven. They're the only division. I guess we should point this out. The only division now with only seven teams. Six of them are
lucky for Colorado. They can say they finished seventh instead of eighth.
They might still finish eighth. But they have six teams that could all legitimately make the playoffs. I don't know how many of them could legitimately miss the playoffs. That's where it gets tough. Like I could absolutely see five teams coming out of the Central, but. There's teams in the Pacific that are going to make a claim, too. I mean, it's not inconceivable that only three teams come out of the Central. I still think Chicago gets in, though.
All right.
Jamie?
I made my point.
Okay. Jamie rests his case. Any other contenders you want to talk about before we transition to the team that is favored to win the West now?
All right.
The Edmonton Oilers.
I do want to talk about one other team briefly, just to mention that.
The Red Wings?
No. There's just the definition of insanity. The Winnipeg Jets still are a goalie away from being the best team in the Central Division. And
do you think they would jump?
I don't know.
If you put Corey Crawford or just cloned him and put him on Winnipeg, we'd be talking about them among the Central Division favorites.
What would Corey Crawford's clone be named?
I said you can't even do a spoonerism because it wouldn't change anything.
What's a spoonerism?
Is so we switched the first letters.
I didn't know they had a real name.
Yeah, there's a word for it. I learned it from
my
Alex.
Spinning.
So I can't do a spoonerism with my own name?
You can't.
Okay.
You are a spoonerism.
I'm going to tell everybody I'm a spoonerism. That's my new Twitter profile. I agree with Jamie that Winnipeg is – that's twice in the same show.
Wow.
It's going to be a long year.
I'm feeling uncomfortable over here.
That Winnipeg is a – dangerous team if they had a goalie, but you know, like he just said, they went out and they got Steve Mason, who might be good and he might not. He rotates every year.
With all that was available, though, you go get Steve Mason. Come on,
you can survive with league average goaltending. You can't survive with far below league average goaltending. I don't care how good you are. You can't.
I think it's unfair to blame all of Winnipeg's problems on their goaltending. Their goaltending was horrible. I'll state that straight out.
Yeah, let's not get confused.
Yeah, they give up a lot of shots. They're not a good defensive team, and that needs to change too, which gets us back to that whole poor Paul Maurice 4-year extension thing, which makes zero sense. Yes, he's still on my hot seat. just out of principle. There's he no should way. Be on the hot
that,
seat.
That topic was supposed to be named the Paul Maurice.
It really was.
And now, I mean, you can't get rid of a guy who just signed for 4 years, right?
I don't have Winnipeg making the playoffs this year.
I don't either, and that's
and then the owner's going to look at the GM and say, wait a minute. Didn't we just give our coach a four-year extension? Because we thought Steve Mason was
what was the urgency to do that, by the way? Were people banging on Paul Maurice's door? We want you to run our team.
He was having trouble on the recruiting trail.
He pulled a Nick Saban.
Lame duck coach.
Not doing anything.
I don't know. We got off track again, didn't
no,
we?
No, let's follow that and segue into coaches on the hot seat. Let's do that, okay?
Okay.
So it can't be Paul Maurice, even though he would have been...
Still on my list.
Everybody's first pick. Who else do you have on your list, Craig?
Well, you know, Luke, if you actually read my content, you'd be able to see that for yourself.
Let's talk about it.
Like, I mean, I don't want to be the only one speaking here on who I think should be on the list, but a couple other candidates that I threw out were Dave Hackstall in Philadelphia and Jeff Blashill in Detroit, because every young player on Detroit's roster regressed last season, and that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
That organization's a tire fire right now.
Anthony Mantha was better.
Okay.
Ant-Man.
I didn't put him on my list, actually.
But that's about it.
I'm sorry, I had 12 other players.
Oh, okay. No. that's because I feel like there is probably still a somewhat unrealistic expectation in Detroit that I get the feeling the Red Wings organization, and I guess to a certain extent you do need to feel this way going into a season, but I get the feeling they sort of think they're a playoff contender. And I'm not as down on them as you two are, but I don't see them as a playoff team.
I think they're finishing last in the conference. I do.
Wow.
You want to talk unrealistic expectations. I think those exist in Philadelphia, and I think that might be part of Dave Hackstall's problem, especially when you've got veteran coaches out there, you know, instead of a guy who was a bit of a surprise hire, right, out of North Dakota. You've got veteran coaches out there, like three of them that you can choose from and say, okay, we need someone to come in and whip this into shape. If they struggle out of the gate, I could see them making a change really fast.
That, I think, is the equation, is having a coach – that isn't necessarily proven on a team that may struggle, but in a city, in an organization where expectations are high. And so I do think
they throw batteries at you if you don't do well. Well,
expectations in Philadelphia are always just a
what else have they thrown in Philly?
Snowballs, batteries.
Didn't they throw snowballs?
Yeah, they threw snowballs, batteries. Never a Lombardi trophy, though.
Okay.
Oh, wow. That's a low blow. Maybe if you let the fans in Philadelphia pick the next coach in Philadelphia, would it be Carson Wentz? I feel like it would for every team. Another team that, well, I guess they don't fit those criteria, but Travis Green in Vancouver.
Yeah, he could be a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
Easy scapegoat.
What about Bob Bugner in Florida just because they like to fire their coaches?
I anything's possible in Florida. I have no idea what's happening down there anymore.
I mean,
I'm baffled by what's happening.
I'd throw out Bill Peters. But I don't know how likely that is.
They love him. They do love him.
Yeah, there. And so then they might be a lot more patient.
But
and
are Carolina you on board, by the way, with the Carolina? Oh, everyone. Carolina's a fashionable pick this year. Take a big leap up, like be a playoff team. I don't see it at all.
No. They had a strong second half when their games didn't matter anymore.
They do that a lot.
Which was nice. They did two years in a row. I don't know. I also don't think that team on paper looks like a playoff team.
Look at the center position. Again, I'm not blown away by their center position.
No.
Are you?
It's too tough of a division. I mean, they were a team that we all liked last year to take a step forward, and I guess they technically did, but that division's too tough for them. Just getting better doesn't put them in the playoffs. That's the problem they have.
Well, and that might be a good thing for Peters. If ownership / management has a more realistic view of what that team looks like now than I think the hockey world collectively does, then there's no reason to have him on the hot seat. But I think people, like you said, are picking them as this is the Dallas of the Eastern Conference. They're gonna shoot right up the standings, and I don't see it.
No, in this Craig's List article where you broke everything down into threes
three-peat.
But I know that you were very strict about it. Like you couldn't. You actually don't even have my first pick as far as a coach on the hot seat as one of your three. But I can't imagine Jared Bednar is very safe in Colorado.
I don't know. He could be. I mean, yeah, you're right. He could be. If they have another like 48 point season, I could see him going.
If they finish below Vegas,
it almost feels too easy to blow him out.
Well, let me ask you this: if the Penguins were going for a four-peat right now, would he have been fourth on your list? If you were breaking this entire article down into
probably.
Fours, okay.
Craig
probably.
Doesn't do hypotheticals.
I guess not. Craig doesn't like. So wait, if Pittsburgh doesn't win the Cup this year, when you do this next year, is it just going to be lists of one
of zero? Actually,
I haven't determined that yet.
All right,
check back.
Should always be planning ahead. Anybody else on the hot seat? I want to do this draft. And does Jamie even know what we're going to do?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
This is the sort of thing you're going to love, Jamie.
I'm sure.
No, it's seriously.
Okay.
So we're just going to go around the room. And the point here...
I already know which one team that Jamie's going to pick. So do you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just going to try and collectively, we each get two picks. We have to come up with six teams that have no chance of making the playoffs. So when we look back at the end of the season, we're not sitting there saying, oh, Jamie took Detroit, and look, they're in the playoffs. You got to pick teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, because the whole point is there's so much parity in the NHL. Now, there's some bad teams in the league, but can we, without a doubt, find six teams out of the 31? And remember, 16 make it. Can we find six that, without a doubt, absolutely aren't making the playoffs? And I would say let's let Craig pick first.
I get to go first?
You get to go first.
This is so easy. Vegas.
Okay.
No expansion team is making the playoffs.
Who goes second here?
Detroit.
See? Okay, I told you.
It's easy. I'm going to stay on brand.
We knew who
you
were going to stay on brand.
It's easy early, but it's... We'll see.
I have no fear.
I will go with Vancouver. Now, do we snake and go back the other way? I get to pick twice?
Oh, so I got to go...
Yeah.
Whoa, so you've changed the rules now to benefit yourself.
I absolutely
have.
All right, I'll take Colorado.
Oh, look at you.
Should we make this... one of us needs to write this down.
All right.
All right, it's Jamie's pick.
It's Jamie's pick,
And look, here's the stakes. You get mocked and ridiculed not only by me if you're wrong at the end of the year, but I would hope by every listener.
Buffalo.
Ooh, see, now that's...
Not buying it. Not buying the hype.
I agree that they're probably not going to make the playoffs, but I wouldn't say they're definitely not in.
I would. That's why I picked them.
Well, I know you would. You just did. We shouldn't have let Craig pick last. It's going to take an hour to make a pick now.
I'm going with the Florida Panthers.
Not Chicago?
No.
Okay. Wow, Florida.
Yep.
All right, so what do we have? Let's recap this. You went Vegas, Detroit, Vancouver, Colorado. What did Jamie say?
Buffalo.
Okay.
Buffalo and Detroit.
Florida. Okay. All right. Feel confident with all those? Not just the ones you picked, but the ones the rest of us picked?
I do, actually.
Yeah, are there any others you would add to that list?
I think New Jersey's still going to struggle. I still think they have a long way to go, especially with Travis Zajac being out for a while. I think that, you know, pushing Nico Hischier into a role for which he's probably not ready yet is a little much to ask. Though I think they'll be a little better maybe in the long run if Zajac comes back, but I don't think they're a playoff team.
Yeah, I agree. And pretty much everybody else that we didn't pick, I think, will be within 10 to 12 points of a playoff spot, so they're in that range.
They at least have the upside if everything goes right.
Yeah.
I mean, we just named Carolina, too. You think Carolina's a playoff team? I don't think they're a playoff team.
No, I mean, it's not like I think 25 teams
but I think
are
they'll be
within, playoffs,
yeah.
But they could.
I think they'll be within 12 points of a playoff spot.
That's the most backhanded compliment I've ever heard. I don't even remember where I was going after that. But see, was that not a game that you like, Jamie? You get to pick teams that have no chance.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that Vancouver was taken before I could take Detroit and Vancouver and just got the ultimate Jamie stack there, but you know.
That's why I jumped in there and grabbed them as quickly as I could.
The Jamie stack.
Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews.
Yeah, two best players in the world. According to. Yeah, the best player ever played.
Where do you see this going this season?
I don't think they're ready.
For what? To win a cup?
To win a cup, either team.
But
if I had to pick one of those two teams, I'd still pick Toronto over.
Yeah, Toronto has a better team.
Yeah, they do have a better team. Edmonton has the best player, but
Toronto has a better team, but a tougher path.
Yeah, so Toronto's a better team, but Edmonton's path is a lot easier.
But just in terms of those individuals, can they both take a step forward from what they accomplished last year? I guess let's do this individually instead of lumping them both together completely. Let's start with Austin Matthews. I'm guessing he doesn't score 5 goals in his first game this season, but 4 goals in his first NHL game to get things started, and then he finishes the year with 40 goals last year, which is right up there 4 off the NHL lead. I don't see him taking a step back. I think, Craig, I was talking to you about this the other day, right? We both kind of think he could score 50. I'm not going to pick that this year.
Probably not.
But he's capable.
I think he is capable. I think he's a pure goal scorer. I really do. I think he's one of those guys who has a nose for the net, and I think he'll get to 50 at some point in his career.
I think even maintaining what he did offensively and just rounding out his game a little bit more in a second year is a massive success. When you start off that high up on the list, he's not going to score 60 goals next year. It's not going to happen. You're not going to see an equal level jump. And same thing with McDavid. But I do think he is definitely a 50 goal scorer at some point in his career if he stays healthy. And if he can go back, No, Austin Matthews.
Matthews, okay.
And if he's able to, again, stay in that 40 range, a little above 40, and is a better all-around player, I think that's a massive successful season for a sophomore year.
If I set the over-under at 39.5 goals for this season, are you taking the over or the under?
Taking the over.
I'll take the over again. And hope for health.
Wow. I think I probably would, too. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say he's not going to hit 40, but that's remarkable if he steps in his first 2 years. You can take the whole narrative of the fact that he grew up in the desert even out of this. Just the fact that you step into Toronto, of all places, where you're already being viewed as the savior the second you put your skates on, and you deliver back-to-back 40-plus goal seasons playing center, that would be quite remarkable. In terms of McDavid now, 30 goals, 70 assists, 100 points last year. Those numbers go up this season? What does an improved Connor McDavid look like now in year three?
He's got to play better in the postseason than he did. That's the start right there, because he wasn't, as we've talked about, he wasn't even their best player in the postseason.
No.
But in terms of production, when you're a 100-point player, it's hard to ask for improvement on that. Maybe he can't. I mean, we haven't had a 120-point player since Sidney Crosby did it in 06-07. Maybe he can get to that. He's probably the caliber of player that can reach that point. But, I mean, they have to have more team success. That's really what it comes down to. And that's hard to add. When you look at Edmonton's season last year, they had 103 points.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be hard to improve on. And if people are expecting another leap from there, I think it's a little harder for Edmonton than it is for Toronto. Toronto just made the playoffs, and that was a big deal for them. But I think their upside is higher than Edmonton's right now. Again, we can talk about the various reasons for that. Some of the moves that Edmonton has made were not good moves, in my opinion. They don't have the pieces around him, and I think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, and when you come in and you play at such a high level, your improvements are going to be incremental, and they're going to be smaller than from other players around the league. Might come in and score 15 goals the rookie season and then score 30 goals their sophomore year. You're not going to have that kind of a jump from year one to year two for Austin Matthews, or from year two to year three for Connor McDavid. If he's able to maintain a 100-point or 105-point pace over the course of a season, that's successful. And if he does it over multiple seasons and he does it over a long period of time, that's a Hall of Fame level player. And you don't need him to score 130 points for him to show improvement.
It's funny because I look at the two of them, I think it's more, I don't want to say easy, but it's more likely that for Matthews, his team goes deeper into the playoffs. I mean, they made the first round last year, and we've sort of already established that we feel like they have a better team than Edmonton. McDavid may be the better player of the two, but I feel like McDavid actually still has room to improve on his numbers, because not like 30 goals is bad, but when you're talking about McDavid in the sentence, if people are already talking about him as one of the best of all time, it took him a while to get to 30 goals last year. I mean, there's a lot of players in the NHL that scored more goals than Connor McDavid last year. I think his overall stats could get better. They made it to Game 7 of the second round last year. I mean, it's going to be tough to truly improve on that because the team around him didn't get better.
Yes, but that's going to be the area where if he improves himself, that is where they can gain the most upside there. Because as Craig pointed out, and we said it a bunch, Leon Draisaitl was their best player in the postseason. And I don't think there's anybody that doubts that.
No.
And we can go revisionist history all we want about the next great one, but ultimately he wasn't all that special.
It wasn't terrible.
It wasn't bad,
games.
But
no.
He wasn't taking over games. And Edmonton's not good enough around him for him to not take over games.
And therein lies the problem, too, right? To expect, when we're measuring McDavid's progress in terms of team success, it's hard for him because it's putting a lot on him with what his general manager has put around him. And don't forget, Andrei Sekera is going to be out for a long time with an ACL tear. That blue line is not that great to begin with, so they've got some issues there.
Let's transition from this into some of these awards. I don't know if you want to do predictions or if you just want to talk about them, but getting into the we'll just look at the main ones: the Hart, the Vezina, the Norris, and the Calder. We won't go too in depth on the Lady Bing until later on in the season, I guess. But for the Hart Trophy, is McDavid your pick?
Yes.
Craig is nodding on
yes.
the radio.
This doesn't make for great intrigue here, but yes, he is at this point.
Go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
I don't think voters will be sick of him yet.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think there's just so much incentive for voters to want to vote for Connor McDavid, and he is good enough to justify it that at some point, that's going to keep happening.
I think he's going to have a season this year that I don't think he didn't deserve the Hart last year, but you could have made a case that two other players deserved it just as much, if not more. I think he's actually going to have a better season this year. But if Austin Matthews puts together the year we all just said he's going to...
There's a new number one.
Yeah, I mean, by that point, we'll have had two full seasons of Connor McDavid. He's old news. We have to move on to Austin Matthews at that point, right? And he plays in Toronto. So if they have similar seasons, is it going to shock you if Austin Matthews wins the MVP this year?
Well, it wouldn't shock me, but I think it. He would. His point. People are going to look at point totals and goal totals, but I don't think that. I still don't think goals are valued enough when people are looking at final totals. I think points just stand out. If Austin Matthews has 90 points and 43 goals, and Connor McDavid has 30 goals and 110 points, I think people are going to just. I don't know. I feel like there's that disconnect still. I do like Craig's number three choice on here, Tyler Seguin, which has, I think that would be, I don't really call him a dark horse, but.
I didn't see Adam Honor. That was going to be my
Number three on your Hart Trophy, but I think that's a very good possibility if Dallas makes their way back into the postseason, Seguin stays healthy on that top line. I mean, he could flirt with 90, 95 plus points.
Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. If he's able to play out the full season, he's very capable of scoring 40 goals and on that top line putting up. I'm just repeating now what Jamie said. Nikita Kucherov.
Yeah, that's another one to watch, in my opinion.
Could be, yeah.
Quietly putting up about 85 points a year.
And doing it consistently last year on a team that was without Stamkos, that had a couple players that were struggling. They were under the gun, but he was the one guy still driving that train and had a terrific season, I think 85 points. He's a guy to watch in this mix, too. They're going to be better this year. They're going to be driven. Stamkos, I think, is also going to have a terrific season as long as he's healthy. That's going to be a fun team to watch. And Kucherov is just, he's one of those guys. I mean, hockey people know about him. I can't say he's under the radar, but he's not as appreciated, I don't think, as some of the other players we're just talking about.
We're obviously not listing everybody here. There's quite a few names that could come up into this discussion, but I'll throw three names out there that we haven't said. Erik Karlsson, Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin.
I don't think Ovechkin's in this anymore. I think his time has passed.
And this goes back to kind of the goal conversation that we had. I don't think he's going to put up enough overall points for people to put him in this conversation. Karlsson, again, if he does what he did last year, he deserves to be at the very, very forefront of this conversation.
As long as he's healthy.
Right? Absolutely.
Yeah. And Sidney Crosby's always going to be in the conversation.
And Crosby's the best player in the world still. Yeah. So
My thought on those three is sort of, you know, what Jamie's making a number of good points today.
I'm brilliant. Just say it.
No, I won't say it. I'm not going to lie to the listeners. There is, I think, a lack of appreciation for scoring goals in the NHL. If Ovechkin goes out there and puts up 48 goals this year, which he's entirely capable of, you're right. I feel like people have just sort of moved on from him. And when you have the voting process, and we saw this last year for MVP, it just people look at points more than goals. It's not easy to score goals in the NHL.
It's, in my mind, the hardest thing to do in hockey is to score a goal. That's the goal.
I think you also have to, I mean, if he's doing something extraordinary from that position, if he's scoring 50-plus goals, okay, put him in that conversation. But again, look at the responsibilities of the various positions, right?
Yeah, but
look at what a center does. McDavid, look at what Erik Karlsson does.
McDavid wasn't playing defensive hockey last year, and he won the award going away.
You can poke holes in his MVP candidacy for that very reason. I agree with you.
I think,
but I think that's what people look at. I think they look at the responsibilities of the center position or of a guy like Karlsson who plays half the game.
And Ovechkin might not be the best example. I know I used it, but that's probably not the best example for the goal thing because Ovechkin doesn't touch as many areas of the game as even a Connor McDavid.
He's basically become a spot-up shooter.
Yeah, which again, that's fine. If he's going to score 45 goals, there are 31 teams in hockey that would very much like that. But it's part of the conversation when you're talking about elite talent and you have to hair split. That's one of the things that knocks him down the chart.
Crosby not winning last year. I don't think he can do any better this year than he did last year. So I kind of feel like we're at the LeBron point with him where unless he just does something amazing and other players get hurt, he's not going to win any more MVPs. He'll be a finalist. And Karlsson, I think, actually would be in a good spot to do it, but he's hurt. And there's too many pure skill guys now for a player to miss even 15 games and have a chance to win the MVP.
Yeah, he'd need to miss a single-digit amount of games or else he's going to have a very difficult time unless Ottawa goes on some crazy run and he's just a monster, which, again, is possible. He can take over games and has and will continue to.
What about the Norris then, since we're talking about Karlsson? Who else do you have in that?
Well, he's first and foremost. I mean, Brent Burns obviously won it, so you have to consider him still, although I think San Jose is going to start taking some steps back here. I think that's a team that's going to start declining here. But Victor Hedman's another guy that I think you have to mention.
At some point, it feels like he's got to get one.
it feels like this is Carlson's award to win. Like you could, this is probably the easiest slam dunk award of this season, except he's hurt going in.
But he may come back quickly, and if he does, yeah. I mean, if he just does what he does, the fact that he hasn't won it recently is probably going to bother people enough where they're just going to hand it to him. And yeah, he is the best defenseman in hockey. You can make an argument that he's the best player in hockey. You can make that argument.
How far we've come in 12 months. Yeah, 12 months ago.
Well, you know.
But he changed his game.
Eric Carlson delivers his mea culpa to me in person that he hadn't played strong enough defense. Well, you know, I'm sold now.
I'm so disappointed that you didn't end up wearing an Eric Carlson wig last year. We need to come up with a
new But he changed his game. And
he did.
And then had success at an elite level, too, which I think is remarkable. I think Brent Burns comes back down to earth a little bit offensively, which is going to hurt him a little bit. I mean, Drew Doughty's very good, but I don't think he's going to be in this conversation. Some other names that you could see on this list from other writers here at FanRag Sports. Zach Werenski, I think that's a few years away, maybe. But number three, Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Now, he's a little bit banged up right now, but docket system, maybe he puts up the offensive numbers to kind of get him in that conversation.
I'll be curious to see how his pairing with Nick Chalmerson pans out. I like the pairing. I don't know if Oliver's ready to move up into that stratosphere, but I expect better from him. Another guy to mention, of course, is Duncan Keith, but he doesn't have anything around him, so that's a big problem.
He's going to have to play 40 minutes a night.
Yes.
Nothing new for him. To the Calder race. This, to me, it's been fun the last couple of years. And actually, McDavid, I guess, didn't win it 2 years ago because of the injury. But you had such an overwhelming favorite coming in each of the last 2 years. McDavid, if he plays the whole season, he should have won 2 years ago. And Austin Matthews ends up doing exactly, living up to the hype, if not exceeding expectations last year. This year, good luck. I mean, you've got players that may make it onto NHL rosters this season after being drafted just a couple months ago. You have players that were drafted 2 years ago that are going to be rookies this year. You have guys from last year. It's wide open this year. It really is. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, Charlie McAvoy, Clayton Keller are two guys that really jump out to me. McAvoy, it's always – I feel like it's gotten easier to make it as a finalist for the Calder as a defenseman, but it's still hard to actually win the award because people are looking at offensive numbers when it comes right down to it.
And that's my hesitation. I think Charlie McAvoy would be my top pick. I think he has the ability to make the biggest impact of any of the rookies. Right now, I mean, he's getting top pair minutes right now in Boston. We'll see how long that stays there. But, you know, Nico Hischier is another one. I don't know what to expect from him. I'm not sure he would have made the team if Zajac was healthy, but he's not, and you have to live in a world where he's going to be thrown in right away. Maybe he has some more success. I mean... The local guy here in town, Clayton Keller.
No doubt.
I mean, that's he's going to be in a position to succeed.
He had a lot of points in the preseason. I've been, you know, I don't want to put too much stock in preseason because I just don't.
I think it matters with him, though.
I do, too. And that's exactly what I was going to say. He needed to show that, I think, in those first few games. I think he needed to prove it to the coaching staff as much as anything. And if you listen to Rick Tocchet talk about him, he's effusive in his praise of that kid, far more so though than the other rookies that he's looking at. I think Clayton Keller has a real chance here to make an impact.
If you look at the preseason stats, I want to double check. Yeah, he finished 2 points behind Connor McDavid for the NHL lead in the preseason. Now, again, preseason stats typically don't mean anything, but if you look at Keller and what he's done throughout the last year or so of his career, he was great at the World Juniors and helped the U.S. win the gold there. He was great at the World Championships. And that at that point, you're playing against NHL players. He was great in college. And the biggest knock, or not knock, but question mark with him is he is such a smaller player in stature. He's clearly skilled. He's clearly got all this upside that everything you've heard about him is real. But can he play in the NHL against bigger players? That's why I think the preseason matters, because he was playing against NHL-sized players in the preseason and put up 8 points.
And oh, by the way, they put him at right wing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The position he's played the least of the four positions, and nobody thought it was a problem. I questioned it because, you know, you're bringing a kid in as a rookie and he's got all these expectations lumped on him. Hey, let's change your position. Is that going to be a problem? If he succeeds in spite of that, and in spite of the fact that he's a rookie, wow, what a boost that'll be for the Coyotes.
And there's a decent chance he sees a lot of top line minutes for the Coyotes this season, potentially playing with Max Domi and Derek Stepan, so two guys that are going to set him up. He's on the right side now, as you just said, so if he stays there, he's in a better position to score actual goals, being a left-handed shot. We already know he's a playmaker. He just he seems like the most skilled rookie that I've seen this year. It's just a matter of if he can do it over 82 games. If he's going to hit a wall at some point with his size, just constantly getting hit by huge NHL players. Mm-hmm. But he's hard to hit. And that's why the preseason was so big in my mind, again, is because he wasn't facing Drew Doughty every night, but he's facing NHL defensemen now, and he's still succeeding.
Yeah, and he's going to be in a spot where he can generate offense. He'll be given every opportunity to generate offense where he's positioned, where he's the line mates he's playing with, the amount of minutes per night.
Yep.
So he is in one of the best situations of any of the rookies to have success. Now the question is, can he do it, and can he sustain it over the course of a season?
About a couple other names here. You mentioned Nico Hischier. How do we feel about his upcoming season? Is it just simply a matter that there was an opening and they need to get him in there?
No, I think he was going to play anyway, but he's going to get more minutes now with Travis Zajac out. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing because he's going to be in situations for which he may not be quite ready yet. He's going to play tougher minutes, tougher opponents. But if he's got that otherworldly offensive ability, which is why they chose him over Nolan Patrick in the first place, he's going to have a real opportunity. He's going to get the minutes.
How about Nolan Patrick?
Maybe.
His game maybe doesn't translate into raw numbers.
Yeah, that's my concern there, because it really is. When we're talking about award winners, it usually is about the numbers, right?
Yeah, I feel like he's just going to be steady in what they ask him to do. And if all of these other rookies are disappointing, then if the water level lowers, he'll still be standing and have a decent season, and maybe in that regard he could win. I feel, and it's not a knock on Nolan Patrick, but if he wins the Calder Trophy this year, I feel like we're going to look back and say it was kind of a disappointing rookie season across the board.
He probably has the highest floor of a lot of the rookie forwards that we're talking about, but I'm not sure he's going to put up the spectacular. Somebody is going to have a spectacular season, not a Matthews or McDavid season, but somebody is going to have a spectacular season. I just don't think it's likely to be Nolan Patrick.
Alex Nylander or Joel Eriksson Ek from Buffalo and Minnesota, anything there? I mean, at least sort of guys that could make a push. Probably players you should keep an eye on.
Yeah. Minnesota would love to have a guy who produced a lot of points, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would.
I mean, DeBrincat. I mean,
yeah, that's another guy to watch.
That's a high upside potential. I mean, you could end the season, he has 14 points in 25 games, or he, you know, where is he? Yeah, does he take Panarin's spot for enough games to where he's going to, with his skill level, just going to find points? I don't know. I just I feel more confident in some of the top guys that we talked about: Hischier, McAvoy, Keller.
Before we wrap it up, any key trades or free agent signings from the offseason that really caught your eye as we head towards this season in terms of impact moves? There wasn't really a lot of huge free agent signings.
No, I mean, that going in. We talked about Alex Radulov already. Kevin Shattenkirk going to the Rangers. I think he got trashed for the postseason that he had. I don't think that was really fair. I think you look at the body of work, and that's what New York needed on their blue line, so I think he's going to help them.
I feel like he got blamed for what Brooks Orpik did partially, too.
Yeah, Brooks Orpik deserves a lot of blame. Patrick Marleau is another interesting one to me, at least in the short term. I like this signing. I think the money and term are crazy for a guy who's 38 years old, but I understand what they're trying to do there to get that veteran influence. And let's face it, this guy's been productive still at this age. So slipping into Toronto, he could have a big impact on them in the short term.
Hasn't missed a game since 2009. That, to me, is one of the most important stats when you look at Marleau. I think they probably signed him for too long. I don't have a huge problem with the amount of money for 1 year, but you look at his age and you think, oh, he's going to break down. He hasn't missed a game since 2009.
Yeah, he undoubtedly helps them this year. It's separating what he's able to give them this year in the contract, because the contract's awful, and we talked ad nauseum about that on a couple episodes ago. But he will help them. You know, they're probably not a playoff team this year, but the moves Arizona made in the offseason, getting Stepan, getting Jarmerson, getting Ronta, that changed, that accelerated the rebuild of the franchise pretty rapidly. Those moves are not going to make a huge impact, I think, in year one, because I don't think they're going to be a playoff team in year one. But as we start to look at how this team has grown, when we look back 3, 4, 5 years from now, that's going to be a massive accelerating point.
Yeah, the more I look at it, the more I'm shocked they were able to get Stepan for what they gave up. And I know they gave up the 7th overall pick in the draft, but we said this constantly last year. The Coyotes didn't need any more picks, and they still had a first-round pick this year later in the draft. They needed a player like Derek Stepan, and to get him for that pick was, and to get Antti Raanta thrown in there, was huge.
Right. If that trade pans out for New York in the future, maybe it looks okay.
I understand why the Rangers did it.
Yeah, I'm not a big Anthony DeAngelo fan. I think he's got huge defensive deficiencies, and I didn't see much of a commitment to improving those. If the pick pans out, okay, if you get an elite center, fine. That's what everybody's looking for.
So but when you make
get
the trade, you don't even know who's going to be available.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And you got a starting goaltender and a center who can fill your number one spot. You can call Derek Stepan maybe, you know, an optimal number two center, not a number one center, although he does some things that suggest he's a number one center in terms of possession, et cetera. But that to me, that's a great trade for the Coyotes, looking at what they needed. A couple more trades to watch.
Well, hold on. I feel like if you were Anthony D'Angelo's coach, you would rip the D off the back of his jersey and be like, you have to earn this D by playing. So you'd be Anthony E'Angelo if Craig Morgan was his coach. But go ahead.
You interrupted the show for that?
I absolutely did. This whole show is one big interruption.
That's so true. Although, again, I'm sure usually when you put a young player like that that has problems on his third franchise, things always go swimmingly.
Yeah.
Especially when it's in New York.
The other two trades that I would keep an eye on, Artemi Panarin for Brandon Saad was the big trade of the summer. I mean, Panarin is a dynamic talent. I want to see what he can do away from Patrick Kane. If he can remain that productive, Columbus needs that so badly. They need that type of player. This could be a trade that helps both teams because Brandon Saad is certainly going to help Jonathan Toews be more productive. He's the perfect left wing for him. They played so well together. It's too bad Barry Nhosa isn't on the other side, but that's a good pairing. That could be a trade that benefits both people. The one trade that I think has the possibility of being really one-sided is the Jordan Eberle for Ryan Strom trade. Ryan Strom has not been a productive player. If he's going to play with Connor McDavid, I'm still trying to figure out how that works if they just tell him to stay at the red line and get a head start because he can't skate, and Connor McDavid skates like the wind.
Yeah.
So that seems like a weird pairing. He hasn't been he's been a disappointing player. Jordan Eberle has been a productive player. He had a disappointing postseason, so he got trashed for that. I think this was a one-sided trade. I really do.
Maybe he can, like, what's the thing in racing where you drift behind the guy in the jet stream and, like, their speed makes you drafting. Go faster?
Yeah.
Maybe he can draft off Connor McDavid to get up the ice.
Yeah, good luck.
You're right. I mean, that's a trade that Edmonton's on the way up. The Islanders aren't necessarily. So everybody looks at it and they're like, well, Edmonton must have a reason for doing this, so we'll just assume it's a good trade. They got worse with that trade. They did. Jordan Eberle's a better player.
I mean, there's no history of trading wingers, talented wingers, for pennies on the dollar. So, I mean, this must work out for them.
Anything else here before we get to our final four picks?
Well, no, not really.
I feel like you want to do rules changes.
I don't want the new rules are not that interesting to me. Are they that interesting to you?
No.
It's more about the rules I want to see.
Oh yeah, do that.
Didn't address
the rules you want to see.
High sticking the puck on power plays is not an exciting rule change.
No, it isn't.
You know, there's no timeouts for defensive teams following icing, and then there's the offside challenge change. Oh, those are the new rules. I think everybody knows those.
Well, that's the most interesting one, though. The offside one, in case people don't realize that, you get a 2-minute penalty if you challenge and you're wrong.
So it's going to make people think twice about it. You really have to think about strategy and game situation before you decide to challenge that. But that leads me to the rule change that I'd like to see that would make that a whole lot easier.
No salary cap?
Just make the blue line a plane. Enough with trying to tell if a player's skate is half an inch off the ice. Just make it a plane like the NFL. Then it's easy to see if his skate is, in fact, over the blue line. Why is that so hard to figure out?
That's not bad. That's a pretty good one. I give the NHL a lot of credit because, for the most part, when they make rules changes, they don't wait forever to do it, and they typically are ones I like. Like, I like that there was a concern last year that the coaches were just challenging offside on goals against them because they were just sort of throwing a dart to see if it would work. And it was kind of slowing down the game. Now, like you said, you're not going to do it. There's a situation where a team comes in and scores on you, and you're like, I'm going to challenge that for offside. And then not only did they just score, they get a power play too. I mean, that changed the whole game right there.
We were talking to the Coyotes video coach, Steve Peters. And Rick Tocchet even said it. Well, it's going to put all the pressure on the video coach. And we, of course, delivered that quote right to Steve Peters. You can see his hand shaking. Like, yeah, it's going to be really tough for them to make that decision now.
Yeah, those are the main ones. The plane for offside. That
well, I want to get rid of the trapezoid. So does Mike Smith, of course. We all know Smith that the trapezoid is just dumb to me too. Let the goalies play. Why are we penalizing skill because a goalie has it? You know, just let them play the puck. And don't you think it would help defensemen too? From not getting run from behind when they can't even see where the skater's coming from,
yeah,
the forechecker.
Might even add a couple more goals, too, because not every goalie can handle the puck.
That's the thing. They're doing it to benefit offense. Don't let the goal. I don't know. I think it could work the opposite, because you could. The whole idea is getting the puck out of your zone faster now, right? That's where the NHL is going. That would help.
I just read your next one. No loser points. That should be the name of this podcast. You're going to take them away completely? Just 2 points for a win, 0 points for a loss.
And only 1 point for a shootout win. So that they play like hell to win the game in regulation or overtime.
That's interesting. I mean, you've had the sort of soccer proposal out there where 3 for a win, 2 for an overtime shootout win, 1 for an overtime shootout loss. That's
it's so complicated.
So many categories.
Yeah. I make it simple. It's 2-0. Period. You win or you lose. And I think you extend
for a shootout.
Yeah, I think you extend overtime a little bit at a couple minutes, 2-3 more extra minutes, maybe make it a 7-minute or 8-minute overtime, and it's 2-0 for everybody involved.
I don't hate it the way it is as much as a lot of people do, but I could certainly be talked into a scenario where you are either not getting 2 points for winning in the shootout because a lot of times it is sort of a coin toss, or you're not getting 1 point just for getting to a shootout. Because I do feel like there are certain games where you can see teams just trying to hang on to get to overtime just to get that point. And I get why the NHL does it, because when we get to March, there's still 24 teams in playoff contention, and it builds more parity and more drama and intrigue towards the final stretch run of the season. I don't know if they're ever going to change that. I know a lot of fans are against it. And now that Craig and Jamie have both spoken out against it as well, I mean, that's usually the final straw. But I don't know that the NHL feels like that. There's an issue there. Do you?
It goes back to keeping teams in contention as long as possible. That's why we have a second wild card in baseball. I mean, it's all about...
And, hey, job security too, right? Yeah. A coach can say, oh, we're at 500 when they're 9 games under .500. Yeah. If you look, just measure wins and losses. And the GMs can say the same thing. We were a 500 team last year. So it looks good for both of those job titles, I think.
Well, let's just keep in mind the Toronto Maple Leafs lost more games than they won last season.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – National Predators won half of their games. No other sport is that the scenario, but it is in the NHL.
I wonder how different it would look if you switched it to Craig's version where you have to win, or even Jamie's version where it's just 2-0. I wonder how different it would look. Because it's never been that way.
Just get a much better read on teams' actual success.
I feel like the truly good teams would be way ahead of everybody else. And I don't know that I necessarily want that, although you can't argue with a system that rewards the best teams. So I don't know. Are we down to the final four picks here?
I think we are.
Any teams that surprise, or good or bad, do you want to throw any of those in, or do you work into your final four?
I think we've talked about a couple of them already in terms of teams that could surprise this year, but one that we talked about teams that could fall too in the Blackhawks, the Senators, and I even mentioned the Blue Jackets in that mix. But in terms of teams that could rise, I think everyone is expecting the Winnipeg Jets to finally do it. If they don't, I don't know what they do now when they have a coach under contract for 4 more years. Maybe they fire the GM for making that moronic move.
Maybe they get Felix Potvin to be the goalie next year.
Carolina, I'm not ready to say that they're going to make a big move, but they are the fashionable pick. The other team to watch is the team we see on a regular basis, the Coyotes. I'm really curious to see what they can do with all the offseason moves. They're playing a new system under Rick Tocchet. It's a system predicated on pace. I like the moves they made in the offseason. I think it's all going to depend on the progress of their youth, though, because they have other pieces now around. Ekman-Larsson has the partner that he needs. They have the number one center, but they need that push from the younger players now if they're going to take it forward a notch.
I think the big thing with the Coyotes, and I've probably said this on this podcast before, they do have the upside to be a team that most people are probably looking at, finish 6th worst record in the NHL, except they have the upside to make the playoffs. They do have that upside. They didn't really have that the last 2 years. My concern is the first month and a half of the season where, to Craig's point, you've got a bunch. It's not just you have a bunch of new players. You have a new coach. Mm-hmm. You have a new coaching staff. I mean, the GM is still very young, and John Chaik has done a tremendous job, but it's how quickly can you bring all these pieces together? If they can get through the first, if we can get to the end, let's get to Thanksgiving, and they're right around a legitimate 500, then I think they are a dangerous team in the sense that they could sneak into a playoff spot already. But if they come out of the gate and just get hammered while they're trying to adjust on the fly and learn this new system, and they're going to give up goals early, and we don't know what they have in Antti Raanta just yet, and other teams that they're playing are already established, that's going to be tough. Like, their first game is against Anaheim. Anaheim already knows what they are. That's a tough game to go on the road and win if you're the Coyotes, because most of these guys didn't even know each other until a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's... again, they're going to be an exciting team. It's going to be a team that we look at and say, I always go back to, I want to see tangible signs of progress from year to year and for young players from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. I still think that is the goal more than it is how many points you should get this season. Now, 1 to 2 years from now, your goals have to change, and that has to be now it's time to push for the playoffs. But for this year, I just want to see tangible progress. And if they're still in playoff contention deep into the season, that's great because that means the young players are playing meaningful games and it won't catch them by surprise in a year or two when those games are going to start to matter.
I think most of us, I think all three of us would agree that a reasonable point total for the Coyotes this year is a successful season is somewhere in the mid-80s. Mm-hmm. If they can get to that point, great. Kevin Allen from USA Today had them at 92 points, which is like, wow, that's a big leap.
That's a huge leap. And again, not impossible, but that's a lot to ask.
It really is. And a lot of things have to go right. They have to adapt to the system immediately, which is, as I said before, it's like muscle memory. They've been playing under Dave Tippett for so long. Now, I know there's some new pieces, but a lot of these guys have played in a different system. It's really hard to forget that and learn this new thing.
How much do you think Rick Tocchet has to sort of adapt here, too? Because we were at the game in Tucson a week and a half ago or whatever, and he was talking about how some of the players maybe feel like they're entitled to a roster spot. He's dealing with a very young team, and he had success with young players in Pittsburgh, but Dave Tippett used to talk about this when he was here. When you talk about Crosby, you're talking about one of the best players in the world who basically right. practices like he's trying to get on the team every day. Like, he practices like a fourth-line fringe player. That's not normal. And so now Rick Tocchet is here coaching all these guys that are trying to make the team, but maybe they don't have that work ethic. And he's not working with a two-time Stanley Cup champion team. He's working with a team that's missed the playoffs 5 straight years. How much does he have to adapt?
I think that's fair. He's also got to adapt to all these new players. He doesn't know these players' game yet. You can watch preseason hockey all you want. It still doesn't give you a good read on what you're going to see in the regular season. So that's going to be an evolutionary process as well, watching Rick Tocchet and how he coaches this team. He has to learn his personnel, learn their strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, coach always has to adapt to his players, but we want to see how much that he has to adapt. And when you're dealing with a very young team, it's not just what positions you put them with on the ice, but it's the mental factor. What do they know? What are they confident in doing? What are they not confident in? What can they learn right away? What takes just some seasoning to learn? And I think that's going to be, the biggest thing that he can make an adjustment for as the season goes on. Because, again, it's the leadership in terms of how much success they've had in the league in Arizona is vastly different than it was in Pittsburgh. And it's just a different type of leadership. You don't have a Crosby there. You don't have somebody that's got rings plural that can walk into a room and it's every single time he goes into practice, like you said, is doing that and has it with championship experience. So it's going to be just a little bit different experience. Doesn't make it better or worse, just makes it different.
Final four picks?
You go first.
I'm struggling in the West. I really, so really am.
Yeah, the West is...
So am I.
From the East, I will go... I'm still going to put... This is just to pick the conference finals, right?
Yeah.
I'll still put Pittsburgh there because... For obvious reasons. I mean, if we're assuming everybody stays healthy, which I think you have to do with predictions, I think they've earned the right to be projected to go there. And I will have them playing Tampa Bay. So why don't we all do the East first?
All right. I have the same pairing in the East, actually.
As do I. Okay. Second year in a row.
I was trying to figure out a way where I could get Washington in there, but it's not going to be Pittsburgh versus Washington. Either one, they're going to meet each other.
If the Penguins leave the league.
The other team, the dark horse to make its way in for me is Toronto.
Yeah.
You see. But those are my three teams in the mix, and I do have Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh as well.
I think Washington's in the mix. And we all, by the way, just picked a team that didn't even make the playoffs last year to make the Eastern Conference Finals in Tampa Bay.
But a team that also was in the Cup Finals a few years ago, and as you have mentioned many times, within a game of the Cup Finals against the Penguins. Yeah.
And also, if you switched divisions between Washington and Tampa Bay, I might have picked Washington, Pittsburgh, but that's not.
I still want to. I don't think the Capitals go out in the second round. We all know that.
It feels like a failed shot at Carl if he's listening out there.
Sorry,
poor Carl,
friend of the show, although he probably hates us. In the West, somebody else go first.
I still like Anaheim. I think Anaheim's the best team in the West. This Central, pick a team.
I have my teams.
I've got Anaheim, Dallas.
Yeah,
that's a fun pick.
I think that's what I'm leaning toward as well because I think Minnesota regresses heavily. I think St. Louis peaked a couple years ago, and that's where they're at
now too.
Bad Chicago, injuries. I mean that's a team that could also lose again in the first round in 4 or 5 games. So I think as much as I said temper expectations, I think Anaheim Dallas is the matchup I'm going with.
To me, there's 4 teams. I will go with Anaheim and Chicago.
Oh, he's got the Blackhawks again.
But I do think Edmonton and Dallas are right there. I don't think Edmonton has done enough to improve. Maybe just McDavid improves. I don't think Draisaitl really can improve. They're banking on him being what he was last year, and that's plenty. Maybe McDavid can drag them to the conference finals this year. But I'm still going to go with Anaheim just because they are pretty steady, and they're, you know, they'll probably come out of that division. And yeah, I'll go with Chicago. They are, and that's not me saying they don't have deficiencies. I wouldn't put them in the Eastern Conference final, but in the West, yeah, I think they get there.
Who's playing for the Cup? Come on, let's play this out. I'll go first on this one. I have Tampa and Dallas.
I have Tampa.
And Tampa and wins the Cup.
Yeah, Tampa and Anaheim, and I have Anaheim winning actually.
I have Tampa and Chicago, and I have Tampa winning. And that was not my intention to pick Chicago to go to the Cup. It's just, if they get to the Western Conference Final and they're playing Anaheim, is anybody picking Anaheim at that point?
No.
If Chicago's gotten that far?
No. I'll take the Blackhawks over.
Well, I mean, it might depend on how they got there.
Yeah.
Because I the Central doesn't, I'm not excited about it.
It's just hard to figure. It's hard to peg it.
I figure I might be by the end of the year, but just right now, I'm not all that excited by it. Also,
you guys,
the ratings bonanza of Anaheim-Tampa, my Anaheim-Tampa matchup.
When everybody up north is hoping for Edmonton-Toronto and they get Anaheim-Tampa.
Although all the beat writers will be happy. So two nice places to go to in April.
Everybody will complain, but then they'll be golfing and having a lot of fun. Do you guys agree with me in the West, though, that it's one of those four teams? It's Anaheim, Dallas, Edmonton, or Chicago?
I don't have Chicago in the mix.
But do you see another team, Mr. Sunshine?
I mean, somebody has to win the Central bracket. So,
well, that'd be Chicago or Dallas.
Or it could be like a team like, or if you're a team that just maybe underperforms a little bit, if Calgary struggles a little bit, maybe they're the
maybe Nashville goes and gets Matt Duchene and Ryan Ellis comes back and they make another run because they have the best blue line in hockey.
Yeah, that's true. It is wide open. I love it. I love that it's wide open. And it's crazy that it's this wide open and did we all just pick Tampa to win the Stanley Cup?
No, I picked Anaheim.
Okay. How's that been working out for you the last couple of years?
How's Tampa Bay been working out for you the last couple of years?
Not so well last year. I didn't pick up the win last year, but all right, that's going to do it for us. Hockey is here. We'll be back to basically one episode per week now that the season's going. One jam-packed, probably way too long episode per week.
Like this one.
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, it's a season preview. We should be allowed to go 5 hours if we want. But
Schubert doesn't like that idea. But
no, he doesn't. Is Chris still?
Is he awake?
He's asleep. Yeah, somebody's got to wake him up.
I think he stopped recording 45 minutes ago. All right, for Craig Morgan, for Jamie Eisner, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the season preview edition of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.